I'd like to move now to our third presentation, which will be made by Dr. Shannon Nybergs. Shannon is an extension economist at the School of Economic Sciences at Washington State University and has served as the director of the Western Center for Risk Management Education since 2011. Shannon's primary extension effort is in applied economics related to livestock enterprises and risk management. He's also involved with projects examining the economics of infectious animal disease and is a co-PI on the National Integrated Program for Reducing Bovine Respiratory Disease in Beef and Dairy Cattle. Shannon's involved in several projects evaluating dairy nutrient waste management and the economics of anaerobic digestion. As the director of the Washington State University Western's Extension Center for Risk Management Education, he provides leadership for extension risk management education in the 13 Western states and the U.S. Pacific Islands. Prior to returning to Washington State, Shannon was a faculty member in the University of Louisville College of Business Equine Industry Program. Shannon is also a member of the Ag and Uncertain Times team. Shannon received his B.S. degree in Animal Sciences and an M.S. in Agricultural Economics from Washington State University, and he received a Ph.D. in Agricultural Economics from Texas A&M University. Shannon, thank you for taking time to be with us today to share your thoughts for the future. Please go ahead with your comments.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be part of this webinar series and talk to you today. What I'd like to do is I'd like to in my talk a little bit about reviewing what the webinar series was and pull out some insights from that review and talk to the future relative to what our education efforts for Farm Bill will be. If we look at the Farm Bill review, the Farm Bill is the primary agricultural and food policy tool of the United States to authorize nutrition and agricultural programs. Its history dates back to 1933, and interestingly, that first Farm Bill was largely a supply control bill to manage low prices. As Dan mentioned in his webinar, the Farm Bill has evolved over time, and currently where we're at is the 2014 Farm Bill. Often we want to compare where we're at today to where we were previously, and so previously the Farm Bill was the 2008 Farm Bill that expired in December 2012. It was extended for 1 year through the 2013 crop year, and then it expired a second time on October 1st, 2013. If you remember back to that time, that was a particularly contentious political environment because of the debate that was ongoing on the spending bill that resulted in a government shutdown that started on October 1st and lasted for a little bit more than 2 weeks. So during that contentious period, the Farm Bill was on the table, but it was not passed. It was pending, and then it was expired, and then at the start of 2014, the President Obama signed the current Farm Bill on February 7th, citing it creates jobs, cuts waste, and ensures the American children won't go hungry. I like presenting this slide because, one, it talks about the budget, but also it provides a nice schematic of the review of the major titles. And if you look back at our Ag and Uncertain Times webinar series, we have a webinar on each of these titles and talks on each of these titles from the nutrition all the way down to the everything else title. The Farm Bill budget, one parts of the debate on getting it passed was cost savings, and one of the measures of those cost savings is that the Congressional Budget Office does these 10 years projections, and over the 10 years, the current Farm Bill is projected to save over $17 billion over those 10-year budget periods. So if we review back on our webinar series, the Farm Bill was signed into law on February 7th. We had our initial Ag and Uncertain Times Farm Bill on March 3rd. That was a relatively very quick period in which we organized a Farm Bill Education Consortium. John does a very nice job of introducing that consortium at the start of the webinar, and you can see that in the header of our flyers advertising these webinars. But that was a loosely organized collection of organizations that were committed to provide education and policy analysis on the Farm Bill. Nobody had any money to put that together, but it was just a rich collection of efforts to put these webinars together. So if we look at that, there were 6 webinars and 17 webinar presentations, and they're available at that URL that's highlighted in that point. I'd like to thank everybody involved with producing those webinars. It was a team effort. It was a very intense effort to organize and host those, and a special thanks goes out to John Hewlett for just a tremendous amount of work that goes on behind the scenes to get these webinars organized, hosted, working through the technology so it's seamless, and then in the post-production work, John's invested quite a bit of time to make that happen. The 17 webinar presentations in that were all volunteers. Experts, just as you were here today, the quality of those experts and the commitment of those experts to present their information on the specialties that they've addressed in each of their webinar presentations is just outstanding. And I encourage you to go back and use and look at those webinar presentations. So thank you again for all the presenters who volunteered their time and worked it into their schedule, sometimes on very short order, to make it work. So if we look at what our objectives were on these webinar series, and first it was to provide a timely overview of information on the Farm Bill titles. We didn't want to provide, the details are not available yet, but our objective was to provide overview, provide information of the current status, provide highlights of the issues that are pending and are on the table concerning the Farm Bill. And through that, we wanted to provide an education resource. And so those could be directly through the live audience as you're attending today, or through the archived webinar presentations, which have been getting a lot of hits to access that information. And you can use those webinar presentations, one, to directly rebroadcast to audiences that you may go out and have presentations to using the internet link if you have that technology available in your meeting space. Or possibly you might want to just integrate a segment into it or multiple segments and interact between the webinar presentation and your own live presentation that you're doing either to producers or to classes or however your audience is. And that URL below that is a link to the Western Farm Management site wiki that provides a short 6-minute video on instructions on how to embed pieces of this webinar into a PowerPoint presentation that you can in turn use in the field. So some insights throughout this, and Dan mentioned this too, there are some fundamental changes in the Farm Safety Net programs. The direct payments were replaced with risk management-based programs. We moved from a single-year horizon to the life of the Farm Bill. That's a major change. Typically, all those historic problems or historic programs were annual sign-up periods. And now the commodity title moves to a sign-up period that extends to the life of the Farm Bill. And it forces producers to make multi-year risk variant decisions on how to sign up for programs. That these new programs require a complex multitude of decision variables, ranging from base acre reallocation to yield updating to different programs of enrollment. And so that's a major change from the past programs that we're going to have to address in the future with future education efforts. Another example of the change in the Farm Safety Net was the milk income loss contract was replaced with the Dairy Margin Protection Program, and that's a very much an insurance-type project or insurance-type program where the producers will pay a premium that's variant on their margin coverage level and their coverage percentage. The sign-up's decisions is based on their outlook of what that margin is going to be and their individual risk preferences. So very much a change in some of the farm safety net programs. Here's just one. I could have gone through each of the titles and prevented some insights, but this is one that was hit me in relative to home, close to home, and that's on the conservation program. And the conservation program is moving from CRP enrollments to working lands type programs. And in these two pictures, you see a conversion of CRP to crop production that's just occurring this spring, just a few days ago last week when I took these pictures. This field of CRP was in CRP since about 1990, so over 20 years of CRP land use, and then just this spring they're tilling that land to plant a crop on that. So that's one example of a that's ongoing. Granted that this is occurring now and not directly of the 2014 Farm Bill, but it is showing that trend of moving away from the CRP to those working lands of EQIP and other NRCS programs. One other highlight or insight that I'd like to bring to your attention is that the 2014 Farm Bill presents tremendous education opportunities and challenges for us to address. First off, certainly the Farm Bill program mechanics and sign-up decisions are going to need education programs. It's going to require the application and interpretation of decision aid models and moving more towards risk-weighted decision-making over multiple years, looking at risk variances of those decisions and different decision parameters. In that, and that we can develop an integrated portfolio of risk management strategies. And it's important not to lose sight that that this is an opportunity to integrate the risk management strategies from insurance to government farm safety net programs. And this shows that what I've included in this table is I wanted to show the relative importance of the government program payments in the past. This is a farm financial sector indicators table taken from that URL reference, but it shows that the government payment portion of the income statement or the revenue side of that income statement is not as large as you might expect, and it's relatively small to the marketing decisions that are involved in each of these producer decision making. And so I just wanted to highlight that when we go out and develop these education programs, that we not lose sight of the forest and what really matters as far as input cost risk and marketing risk, as well as how to best manage these new programs. So where are we now? So right now we're in the rulemaking process. There is a lot of the webinars that are in the series present a lot of information on the overview and how the different programs are defined and designed. But there are some very specific rulemaking process that's ongoing right now. And I took this slide from Jonathan Coppice. That URL is a hyperlink to his webinar at the Ag on Uncertain Times website that talks about the rulemaking process and what is that process and what's the time frame associated with that process. I think a lot of you are like me where I wish the rulemaking process was more tightly defined, that I could plan, well, this is going to be happened at this date, and then we can plan backwards and develop education and plan our workshops, but that's not the case. The rulemaking is dictated exactly by time frames. There's some suggested time frames that programs have to be put in place by, but the exact time frame is a little bit variant. So where we are now? So I wanted to include in detail some language out of the Farm Bill, and I copied and pasted here and highlighted some of the important points in red. Is that there's some funds available just reading from the Farm Bill, the Secretary shall provide $3 million to state extension services for purposes of educating farmers and ranchers on Farm Bill titles and programs. So, no, I don't think anybody knows exactly how that $3 million is going to be allocated. There's been a lot of talk of directly giving block grants to states. There's been talk of developing a request for proposal application, but that information is not available yet, and how that money is going to go to the state extension services is still up in the air. And secondly, a second $3 million is for web-based decision aids, and that's $3 million to support qualified universities to develop web-based decision aids to assist producers in understanding the available options in the Farm Bill titles, and then to train those producers in those decision aids. So the decision aids, is, again, like the extension funds, is not well discussed on who, on how to access those funds and who's going to be applying for those funds. But the important point being is that there is funds targeted to provide decision aids, develop decision aids, and provide some education along those lines. A recent development is that we had a presentation from Eric Belasco on March 17th on the disaster programs. The sign-up periods for the livestock, honeybee, fruit, grower programs, disaster programs begins tomorrow on April 15th. You can go back to Eric's webinar to look at some of the definitional aspects of those different programs, those livestock indemnity program or the forage disaster program or that ELAP program, to get some overview. But that sign up begins tomorrow for those producers affected by those disasters, and so Eric's webinar provides some information on that. The URL also, and point number four, provides an access to that news announcement of the sign-up period for those disaster programs. So where are we going to go in the future with education? As the program rules are published and decision aids become available, a webinar series is going to be developed with the objective to present detailed farm decision support education. And so we, the Ag in Uncertain Times team, has talked about doing this webinar series as that information comes available. The Farm Bill Education Consortium, which I mentioned earlier, with help from the ERME centers, is going to organize and host a national Train the Trainer Farm Bill Education Conference. That conference is in the planning stages. It's not planned yet, but that is another effort that we're going to host. And then there's always going to be the future discussions to develop regional collaborations to provide Farm Bill education. As we talked about in other meetings, that the pool of resources on farm policy experts and farm management expertise is diminishing across the land grant system, and that there might be some opportunities to pool resources to develop Farm Bill education programs that affect commodities or programs that affect multiple states and different regions, and that might be an effective way to develop producer education along those lines. The Ag Risk and Farm Management Library is a clearinghouse that I wanted to make you aware of on Farm Bill fact sheets and information. That URL link will take you right to that site, and that's a site available where you'll be able to find some fact sheets and information on Farm Bill programs. So thank you for your time, and that's the end of my comments.
Well, Shannon, thank you for that excellent review of how things currently stand following the passage of the Farm Bill. Number of questions that come in here, but would like to put a couple of those to you just now, and then we'll move to our Q&A panel. First question asks, when do you expect the National Farm Bill Education Conference to be held, and what might be the format for that conference?
Well, the conference, as I mentioned, is in the planning stages. We're really waiting on when those decision aids become available, because the intent of that conference is a national train-the-trainer type conference. Producers would be invited to come, but mostly the really what we think our audience on that conference is going to be educators, policy analysts, who are going to go back out and take that information from the conference and then share that in the field with different producer groups. The plan time is, well, it's loosely planned. It's certainly not set in stone yet because of the rulemaking process and lack of definition of when those decision aids are going to be available. So it was, the thought is sometime in late summer or fall, when more information, where we could be make specific education programs available. And then the format of that is really a train-the-trainer type program to provide the decision aids, to provide the presentation materials so that that block of information can be carried back to producers in the area.
All right, thank you for that. Following that on then, question here asks, how do we anticipate that the extension education programs that might be coordinated across the extension service, either at the national level or regionally, as far as addressing changes under the Farm Bill and options that growers have therein?
Well, it's very much a loosely organized effort. Fortunately, that we have a lot of good collaboration across the extension educators, the extension farm management educators and specialists across the regions and across the nations. And so there's no formal method to organize that collaboration, but because of good past working efforts, that there's a lot of people that are working together, looking out on what the opportunities are going to be. And also, it's going to depend on how that extension education funding comes down from the secretary to host these education opportunities. But I think you'll see that people are talking a lot, just like Betsy put up the website on her Producer Alliance on and inviting collaborations on that. I think there's a lot of that type of activity ongoing to foster collaborative work and to share resources.
All right. Well, great. Thank you again for your many observations regarding the shakeup that has come about with the changes the Farm Bill has introduced, as well as a number of other things that are ongoing at this point.